Good morning, everybody. My name's Kim, and I'm an alcoholic. It's certainly a privilege to be up here this morning sharing my experience, strength, and hope with you on the topic, Courage to Change. And it was really nice to meet Amy and John this morning. So let's get it. We're going to have a little lesson on where I'm from. My home is in Canada, in a city called Regina, in a province called Saskatchewan, not Saskatchewan. Anyways, I love you guys. When I got the privilege of serving at the conference as the delegate, we always used to sit across the table from each other and swap accents with each other. So, for those of you who don't know where that is, my province is above the states of Montana and North Dakota. And at this point, I know there's those of you who are giggling about the name of my city. One of my friends, Cheryl, down there, can't even say the name Regina out loud. When the Rolling Stones were in town for a concert, Mick Jagger stated he was happy to be in a city that rhymed with the word fun. So, anyways, now that we got that all out of the way, you know where I come from. And somebody came up and told John he has someplace else to be, and to keep this short, I'm not going to be talking for 20 minutes, I doubt, this morning. So I just wanted to let you know that I was thinking about courage, and I think it takes a great deal of courage to grow up and become who you're supposed to become. But that's not always an easy journey to become that person. In fact, I stand before you to tell you that I have fought most of my growth periods tooth and nail, and not always with grace. Let's face it, it's uncomfortable to change. For as long as I'm alive, though, that process will be ongoing, and sometimes it will be a dramatic event, but sometimes it just means trudging, doing the do, and putting one foot in front of the other until things level out again. My journey is about knowing I'm screwed, beginning the process of getting unscrewed, and following it through. The journey started when I got sober, and I've been sober since September 12, 1987, and I was all of 21 years old when I sobered up. However, I've had a rude awakening a couple of times in sobriety. Most recently, at the end of 2014, beginning of 2015, is when I had to confront some really dark parts of myself. Whenever I had to become courageous, I was never without fears. I'm just getting over bronchitis, too, so I need my water. So whenever I had to become courageous, I was never without fears, but my fears were there to let me know that there was something more important. And on that journey, I had to get honest with myself and with God and another person so I could be free from the so-called bondage of self that we talk about in step three. I've had to have the strength to admit the truth about my darkness at various points, and by admitting my weaknesses, I've had to become vulnerable. And in turn, I get to show you my vulnerabilities, which make you guys grow. Needless to say, this topic is very timely for me, and when I received the invite to speak on Courage to Change, I just about fell over. So how did I get here? Like I said, I was 21. I was homicidal and suicidal. And I suffered with this affliction that was either better than or less than the person standing next to me. I drank like a fish and medicated myself regularly. I had been kicked out of university because I wasn't making it to class and failing everything. And I was indignant as hell about that. I thought to myself, how could you kick an academic as such as myself out of here? I was having panic attacks and I was depressed. Couldn't do my makeup, couldn't do my hair anymore. And for somebody who had a ton of friends, I was pretty much on my own at that point. I had a cat, and she was fed, and she laid in bed with me. The blinds were drawn, the phone was turned off, and the creditors were knocking on my door. Somewhere along the line, I ended up being a nanny for a couple and their three kids. And it turns out that the woman that I was working for was a member of AA. She spotted me coming a mile away. One day I showed up for work feeling like the world was coming to an end, and she knew someone I knew who was also a member of AA that I had had contact with in the latter years of high school. And when she left for work, she called Norm and told him to call me. He did, and he told me it was time I went to treatment and could arrange that for me. I was so scared of myself and what would happen, I blurted out yes. He made arrangements, and about a week later, he dropped me off at a hospital in a little town about 2 hours south of me, and that hospital had a treatment center on the fourth floor. And that was the beginning of my sobriety. I met another man in there from Regina who was getting some sort of a tune-up on his sobriety, and he had friends who came to visit him. I met Judith, and she assigned herself as my sponsor, and when I got home, Judith took me to meetings, and I learned the importance of having a home group. In fact, in my first home group sat my intern teacher I had in grade 8 who raked us over the coals one day for drinking at noon hour. And so it began. This was the first part of my journey. I dove right in. I got the home group, read the big book, made friends with a whole pile of people, some healthy and some not so healthy, got involved in service and made growth occur in my life. That is until I hit one Saturday about a year and a half into my sobriety. I woke up that morning and I felt that that sense of dread, that weight that sits on your chest, and I knew that day that if I did not find somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was going to drink again. So I went to a meeting, didn't talk, didn't share with anybody after the meeting, and I ended up driving to the home of several people I knew and no one was home. Finally found someone from my home group at home later in the day, and I talked about how I was feeling. It was that day. So it was that day, after I was sharing with that person about what was actually going on, and I knew about this line in the big book, but I didn't really pay much attention to it. And that was the day that I was told about you have to concede to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic. And that was the day that I had some sort of spiritual awakening and knew that I was definitely an alcoholic. Because if I wasn't, how come I woke up that way that morning? Because although I qualified and dove into AA, I hadn't conceded. I was too busy comparing myself to everyone in our fellowship because they were all older drunks, and I was so young. And I hadn't experienced some of the things that the older people had experienced. And back then, there wasn't the younger people in, at least where I came from, there wasn't the younger people in AA that are in AA now. And so I was busy comparing in my head. I was loving AA, but I was comparing. And that was the day my journey took another turn. So I went about being sober, and at about the 8 or 9 year mark, I didn't realize it at the time, but in my head I thought somehow I had arrived. I was doing well by having a good job, a great guy in my life who became my husband for several years. I had been back to university to obtain my first degree, and I thought I was the cat's ass. Everything was smooth. Everything was going well. And then two of my very good friends, because I had allowed myself to establish some really good friendships in AA, and I allowed some people to get to know me for who I was. So two of my very good friends told me they were scared of me and thought perhaps I needed some help. And I was horrified. I couldn't believe that somebody could be scared of me, so I went whining over to my sponsor's house and told her in a veil of tears that people are scared of me, and how could they possibly say that? And that was when she told me there will be times in our sobriety where we suit up and show up, but we will thumb our noses at God, and we had a big long discussion, and I had lots of work to do on step 11. And it was during this time in my sobriety that I remembered when I was about 2 years sober, listening to a member talk about how the longer he was sober, the more he needed AA and all that it had to offer. And okay, I guess I needed this more than ever, and again, I dove in. Because see, what was happening that led me to the point to think that I had somehow arrived at a certain destination was that, when I was early in sobriety and was going along, I thought, I love you all. I just love you all. I will never hate anybody in the program. I love service. But what was really happening was I was judging all of you guys. At some point, I started judging people in Alcoholics Anonymous. But as a result of working with my sponsor, life became good again. Then my marriage to that guy came to an end, and I had to yet again get the courage to change. He was also in our fellowship, but one of his addictions was morphine. He had a chronic kidney condition and ended up using again, and we all know how well that goes. I mean, it's hard enough for two alcoholics to live together without all that stuff going on. And I took on some really interesting character defects to deal with all of that. And then it took me 4 years to get the courage to change and part company with him. We did part company in an amicable fashion, and we remain friends today. However, that was one painful journey to change how I acted and had to focus on myself. And the final story I can tell you about when it comes to courage to change is what's happened to me over the last couple of years. I was the delegate in 2013 and 2014, and I was busy, 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 just like all the delegates are when they take on that responsibility. In 2013, I had a couple of health issues and a surgery at the end of 2013, and I was busy, in the meantime, doing all the due of the delegate's position. I'd been gone many weekends, and my home group meets on Monday nights. I'd be dog-tired, and I wouldn't go to my home group. I'd make up a meeting throughout the week, and sometimes I didn't make up a meeting throughout the week, and I began to lose my connections. Because when you're the delegate, I've come to learn is what shape is your triangle? Recovery, unity, and service. And my recovery was suffering big time. And I know that the only reason I didn't drink again was because I was busy serving the fellowship. So the home group that I speak of is the one that I walked into 27 years ago. And I have major connections there. People would check up on me, and I'd say, I'm making up my meetings elsewhere, you know, I'm just tired. And they were concerned. And I'd roll in the door of my home group once in a while. Oh, sorry, I guess I got to get closer. So 2014 rolls around. And my dad, who was a chronic alcoholic, died 10 days before the General Service Conference started. I'm an only child, my parents were divorced, and so I was the executor, the adult kid who still has some baggage related to him, to my life with him. And my mom didn't want any part of funeral planning, and all of her character defects came roaring to the surface. She'd already planned to come to New York with me prior to the conference, and we followed through, and it was a nightmare. So I was dealing with my dad's death. I had noticed that my mom had started to age back at home. There was just some little things that were going on. But when I got her into New York and I was solely responsible to get her around and everything, I realized that she had aged. She was not the normally confident woman that she was. And we were dealing with the death. She left on the Sunday morning that the conference had started, and we were in Rye for the conference. So I wasn't compelled to be running around Manhattan with people, and I got some time to myself, and I had established some very, very good connections with people through my fellowship, or through my service. And so I got through that week, and my journey of not going to meetings continued. And at the end of 2014, God said, "That's enough. That's enough. Like, I need to make an intervention here." And so He had placed a person in my life, and with that came a couple of other people, and I had a spiritual awakening at the beginning of 2015. I was able to establish some sort of relationship with God again, because all the way through my sobriety, I had this eclectic mix of what what my spirituality was like. The first degree that I did in university was a degree in religious studies, and I've come to know that the soul knows, always knows what it needs and what it wants. So I needed Alcoholics Anonymous, and I needed some sort of spiritual intervention. And the mind will go seeking it. And so hence the religious studies degree. And I went to church when I was a little kid with a neighborhood friend. And it was very profound what had happened to me at the beginning of 2015. And I found a way to have more of a structured relationship with God. And it works. And I'm happy to say that life has made a remarkable... It's made a 360 since the beginning of 2015, and things are very much on the upswing, and very running very smoothly now. And so thank God for this fellowship. Thank God for the people that are outside of this fellowship that realize things about me as well. And thanks very much for allowing me to share my story with you this morning. And I saw a quote from John Wayne, of all people, about courage. And he said, courage is being scared to death, but saddling up anyways. Have a good day, you guys.
So guess who's coming up next? Give a big hand to John from New Jersey.
Whew! All right, is everybody ready? My name is John and I'm an alcoholic. I'm freaking out right now. So everybody say a prayer for me. I said a prayer before I came in here. And I had all these great designs on all these wonderful things that I was going to say about why I'm courageous. And, you know, I had 2 months. Thank you, Eva Sanchez from General Service, and thank you for my delegate and whoever the hell else was responsible for getting me on this podium. But I'm just going to tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, and some of my experience, strength, and hope. And right off the bat, I just want to say thank you to my higher power for introducing Bill to Bob 80 years ago. Let him hear it. Courage to change, man, that's a chip shot. It's a can of corn. Courage to change for me comes from my higher power, full stop. But my higher power, sometimes he whispers, and sometimes he speaks, and sometimes he takes a 2x4 out and starts wailing it against my head and saying, John, you better change or you're going to die. But most of the time, my higher power is very, very kind and very, very loving. And he has a huge, huge sense of humor because we're not a glum lot. And he shares his love for me through you, beautiful people. You know, we're not people that wouldn't usually mix. And by the way, everybody from New Jersey, raise your hand. All right, security personnel, I've done my job. You know what to do. I'm a product of Al-Anon. I'm going to repeat that. I am a product of Al-Anon. I love all you Al-Anons. My mother, Agnes Kay, and I'm going to try to get through this. My mother, Agnes Kay, her home group was a smog lifters group in Mattawan, New Jersey. And in 1980, thereabouts, she came up to me and she said, John, I was 15 years old. She was a very calculating member of Al-Anon. And she said, John, why don't you come to my home group and help me celebrate 5 years? Because she walked in these rooms in 1975 and she never drank again. I know what happens in here. You know, I saw my mother come into AA in 1975 and she never drank again. So this one day at a time thing I knew was, you know, just some Jedi mind trick to get me in here, you know. But like a good son, I found myself at that meeting and you guys talked about, you scared me to death about my disease. At 15, if you drink in the morning, if you get fired from a job, if you get kicked out of school, or if you lose a relationship, or if you wet the bed, or, you know, wet the back of a cop car, or pee yourself in a police station, maybe you're an alcoholic. I never accepted another invitation from my mother to go to an AA meeting again. I'll talk more about my mother. My mother would have been 40 years sober this year. And she never pushed. She was an example. I mean, she used to put AA literature in my book bag when I went to school. And she used to leave AA literature in the bathroom. But she introduced me to you beautiful people. And I've been to 7 international conventions, by the way. My home group is Haven of Hope in Hillsborough, New Jersey. My sobriety date is May 27th, 1984. And my sponsor is Bill Keene from Yardley, Pennsylvania. And nobody knows Bill Keene in this room, and maybe they do, but if they do, say a quick prayer, because Bill Keene is he's a little under the weather right now. When I went to celebrate my first anniversary in 1985, my mother came up to me with a badge for Montreal, Canada. And she said, you're going to go to Montreal and you're going to go and see 50,000 drunks. You know, and I was a one-year-old, pissy, whiny, complainy, separated from alcohol, alcoholic. I don't have a job and I don't have a driver's license and I don't have any money. And she said, just get your ass to Montreal, Canada, and God will take care of the rest. So this is the first international convention where she's not with us. My mom passed away last fall. So Mom, this is for you. I miss you. And I love you. And I want to thank you for introducing me to you beautiful people. And I went to Montreal, Canada, and I got to see Lois W. speak. And I was a snot-nosed punk. And I didn't know if I was going to see my mom. She was with all of her old friends. And I'm looking out at Ray C. Hi, Ray. Ray was with me that 30 years ago, and he's in this room today. And I asked Ray, I said, maybe I won't see my mother, maybe I will. And it wasn't maybe a second after I said that, I turned around, and there she was in a sea of 50,000 people in that stadium. And I just knew God had my back. And that's what change is for me. Because I don't have courage to change. John K. from New Jersey does not have courage to change. John with God has courage to change. And that's really That's really the whole message that you guys brought to me. You know, that promise in step six, it doesn't require any work on my part. It just requires me to mean it. And when I ask God to please, please take away this obsession, and I meant it, on my knees, He was kind enough to remove that obsession and compulsion. My mother dropped me off in a little place in Lakehurst, New Jersey called Fair Oaks South, and there was a woman there named Elaine Luthwinger. And I love you, Elaine. You're no longer with us. But you looked into my eyes and you said, John, you're just a drunk. And if you don't change, you're going to die. And I don't know what it was about Elaine, but I believed her. And then she handed me off to one of her assassins, Bernie, my counselor. And Bernie asked me this, I thought, a very insulting question. John, do you believe in God? I said, yeah, well, He's been torturing me my whole life. And she said, that's good enough. That's good enough. Why don't you pray? So much for no changes, major changes in the first year. Find God, believe in God, worship in God. And that was in the first week. Thank you, Bernadette. Because I did. And He answered. And He gave me a separation from alcohol, and He gave me joy and happiness, and He put me in the rooms without a driver's license, by the way, for 6 years. And you nice people drove me to meetings. This guy, Bicycle Bob, he used to come to my house and pick me up, and even when I didn't call him, he'd come. It turned out that we used to eat dinner at the same time every night, so he would come, and he hates when I tell that story, because I don't even know if it's true, but it sounds good. And you took me to meetings, and I'm looking out at a man, Jim Singh, right there in the third row. Took me to my very first AA meeting when I was 17 years old, and I was coming late and leaving early and getting Division of Motor Vehicle cards signed and asking Jim, can I smoke pot and come to meetings? And he just said, John, keep coming, man. We'll be here for you. We'll always be here for you. And there he is. One of my best friends in the world. Family. We're all family, and it's a family disease. I would not be here if it wasn't for my mother. And I have a beautiful family. I'm looking at my wife, Sarah, and she has put up with so much. My children, I have three beautiful children. By the way, I met Sarah in AA, and we married 22 years. And we said, wouldn't it be nice to have some children? So we had one was good. So we said, let's have two was good. We said, let's have three was good. So, very alcoholic. For all you young people out there, you should space it out a little bit, because I have three beautiful children that are 18, 19, and 20. Irish triplets. Thank you to my children and my wife. My home group is Haven of Hope. It's a big book meeting that meets on Monday nights at 8 o'clock. I have another home group. It's a big book meeting that meets in Belleville, New Jersey on a Sunday morning. And I have a meditation meeting that I go to on Tuesday nights called the Woodstack meeting. And there's another meeting that meets on Thursday night in West Long Branch, New Jersey, called the Rabbit Hole. Who's here from the Rabbit Hole? We are not a glum lot. Two big book meetings and a couple of men's meditation meetings. I think God is trying to tell me something. I'll tell a couple of quick stories and I'm going to leave time on this podium for my peers. But after coming into AA and going to dances and going to meetings and looking for love in all the wrong places as a 20-year-old, I started to suffer. And I was wondering, what is this about? And I found a man named Jerry McBride, Father Jerry. And he was laughing and smiling. And he was cheerful. And he was always helping people. And I was kind of in between sponsors. That's code for I had a sponsor but didn't use him. And I said, Jerry, what is this about? And he said, all right, John. By the way, he gave everybody nicknames. Jim Singh, Chachi, Elevator Ray, Rob the Cop. I was Goose. Here, I'll say this for the tape. My name is Goose. I'm an alcoholic. Jerry McBride said, John, where are you in the steps? And I said, well, I worked some steps in rehab, and my first sponsor, he gave me a 12 and 12, and I have a step meeting that I go to, so I'm covered on that. And he said, okay, well, you'll have to find another sponsor, because if you want to work with me, I take my guys through the steps. Oh, yeah, and you have to belong to my home group. And I love you, Jerry. Jerry passed away in 2005, and that beautiful man took me through the steps and took me to meetings and drove me to meetings and took me to conventions and conferences and retreats. And by the way, he was a recovering Mets fan. I think we lost to the Cubs again last night. But Jerry, on his, you know, he was always one to stand up at the podium with this booming Irish Catholic Brooklyn voice and say, this is a God-given gift, and having been given this gift, you can only keep it by giving it away. And one of his last messages to me was, John, don't be a taker, in that Brooklyn accent. Don't be a taker. And in 2005, I was a taker. I had a great career. I'm in the pharmaceutical industry, and my dad loves to say that I'm tapping into a core competency of distributing drugs. And I'm in the best job I ever had in my life. And I'm in a corner office, and I'm a PR man for Johnson & Johnson Pharmaceutical Company, and I was called into an office, and I was summarily dismissed. They had told me to stay away from a certain journalist at a certain major financial newspaper, and I was like, well, I can't do that because you're stupid and I'm smart, and my ego is out to here. And I found myself in Louisiana, separated from my job, the best job I ever had in my life, and I'm with friends, Sarah and Troy. And they were in a nice little town called, I don't know, Louisiana, next to some big Lake Pontchartrain, Metairie, I don't know. And I'm suffering. And they said, John, let's go to a little meeting in Slidell, Louisiana, called the Strange Camels. If you're from the Strange Camels, I want to talk to you after. Because I walked into that meeting at 20 years sober, fired from a job, suffering. And Sarah, I love you, probably said something like, we have a nice guy from out of town and he's got 20 years, maybe he should share. And the leader said, oh, John, why don't you share with us? And they were very polite, you know, Louisiana Southern AA. And I proceeded to spew for 10 minutes about how bad my life sucked. And I love this little old lady, and I don't know if I ever saw her again, and I don't know if I'll ever see her again. But she came up to me after the meeting, and she patted me on the back, and she had little gray hair. She was like, there, John. All that is untreated alcoholism. I wasn't changing. I wasn't changing because I was living in fear. I was just separated from alcohol at 20 years. I wasn't necessarily sober. And I hated that little old lady because she was right. And I came back to New Jersey and I started a company. And about 4 years later, you would have thought that that little old lady would have gotten me maybe back into, you know, the program. But a nice guy named Brian Corrigan, Brian C., he had me in a beautiful location in Charleston, South Carolina. And we were sitting there, and I was telling him, you know, how bad my life was. And he's like, so your wife is leaving you? No. Your kids are run away? No. Your business is failing? No. You're losing the house? No. You're going to drink? No. And then he started to ask me, again, insulting questions like, what's your commitment to your home group? Who are you sponsoring? You know? Where are you in the steps? And then the best one, where are you with God and prayer and meditation? And I wasn't anywhere with any of that stuff. And I still, this is my cunning, baffling disease. I couldn't figure it out. And he goes, John, you have 25 years. Do what you did in the beginning. You are a member of a 12-step program, not working the 12 steps. Again, I can't have courage to change if I'm living in fear. And I can't have courage to change if I'm not praying and I'm not meditating. And that man took me through the steps. Oh, and after 2005, I got Bill Keene to be my sponsor. And I called him in 2010 and I said, Bill, I want to go through the steps. Would you help me? And he said, yeah, John, that'll be a great opportunity for us to get to know each other. He's been my sponsor 5 years. Love you, Bill. Those were dark times. I won't put them down, though, because I believe that my higher power provides me something that's called grace. And he gave me the grace to not drink. And he gave me the opportunity to stay so that I could hear my knucklehead friend say, how about going through the steps again, John? You know? Thanks, Brian. It's totally different today. I'm new again. I know exactly what I need to do to change. The recipe is extremely simple, but it's not easy. Me, I'm wired to be selfish and self-centered. I don't know why that is. Me, it's all about me. And when I pray and I meditate and I sponsor guys and I take them through the steps, my higher power calls on me. And he calls on me to serve. So, after all this time, it's about service. And it's not about John. It's truly unbelievable. I love this situation. I don't know if I'm going to remember anything that I said. I don't know if you guys are going to remember anything I said. But being around this is a perfect illustration of why God is doing this. I was the worst kind of person, and he's given me the opportunity to do some of the best things in the world. I get to come to AA meetings. I get to be at a front row seat and witness miracles. I don't have the courage to change. And when I'm separated from alcohol and I'm not involved with God and prayer and meditation, I'm almost worse because I'm lucid. I'm actually a more effective asshole. Separate. I'm stone cold sober and I'm without a higher power and everything is a problem and I'm not working any steps and I'm miserable and I'm going to make all you guys miserable too. How about that? But when I invite God in, and he's very polite, my higher power, when I look back over some of those darker years of sobriety, and I'm not going to put those years down by any stretch of the imagination, but I can tell you this, there were many years where I didn't pray and I didn't do any step work and I didn't sponsor anybody. Thank God I didn't sponsor anybody. No one had a gun to my head and said, John, be happy. John, be content. John, serve. John, do this. No. But he did give me a beautiful wife, three beautiful children, this career that I'm still, strangely enough, he's found it necessary for me to continue in, and I'm grateful for that so that I can provide for my family. But today, I'm content. I don't have to control everything all the time. I'm fast to forgive, and it doesn't take a lot of trying. And that's because I start my day, here, get this one, with my wife on our knees praying together. And I want to thank you for that. When I'm serving you guys, and when I'm talking to my higher power, and I call my sponsor from time to time, and usually I'm asking him questions about sponsoring, you know, and he's like, usually, you should go to Al-Anon. Anybody sponsors anybody, you're qualified for Al-Anon. And he would ask me questions like, did you take that problem to God? And he, you know, he'll point out parts in the book that remind me that I'm supposed to be in a conversation with my higher power, not in the morning or in the evening, me, this thick-headed drunk, constantly. That's what it directs me to do. I'm supposed to be in constant contact with my higher power, and that's good for you guys, man, because when John starts thinking about John, I get, you know, wrapped around the axle really quick. It's an honor and it's a humbling privilege to be with all of you at AA's 80th birthday. I'm sure that I have forgotten everything that I really wanted to say, and I'm sure that God has put the words in my mouth that I was supposed to say. But for everybody out there that may be wondering, how the hell am I going to change? And it's, for me, God's removal of alcohol from my life. And by the way, there was no chemical on God's green earth that put me where I wanted to be other than alcohol. If I want to change in any way, I can't do it. I'm here to tell you that our higher power can. And I wish you all a great convention, and I want to thank you all for letting me share a little bit of my story. Thank you.
I appreciate that, John. They know about the speakers not working real good. They're going to fix that at break. So when you guys come back to the future meetings in here, you're going to be able to hear a little bit better. I know those speakers down towards the end might sound a little better, but they're going to work on that. They'll get it fixed. Speaking of service, would all the folks with the green t-shirts please stand up? These guys are putting in long hours. Some of them are out there on the streets. They're at the MARTA stations. They're all over Atlanta, and they're really putting it out there for you. So go up and thank them for their service, if you don't mind. All right, last but not least, we got a young lady from Connecticut. Amy M. Give her a big hand.
My name's Amy. I'm an alcoholic. They make fun of me at my district because they always have to turn the volume down when I get up to the mic. I was a theater major. So I have to say that this is my first time at International. It's also my first time speaking on a panel ever. So it is such a privilege and an honor to be here. I was sharing at a young people's meeting last Friday, and I mentioned that I really have no problem getting up on stage and singing and performing with a script and, you know, memorized. But when I'm being honest, and vulnerable, it's not as easy. But then I have to remember, you're my family, right? Seriously. So my sobriety date is March 19th, 2005. I was born and raised in South Louisiana. The connection there, yeah. I always say home of Mardi Gras and drive-through daiquiri pubs. But oddly enough, I really didn't grow up around drinking. My parents weren't really drinkers. But I do have an older brother. He's 4 years older than I am, and he started drinking at a really young age. And I wanted to emulate him. He was my idol. I adored him. So I saw alcohol as, you know, the cool thing to do, you know. I can look back at my childhood and see the isms, the perfectionism, the never feeling good enough. But I wasn't an introverted child. As I said, I was really outgoing. I had friends. I did well in school. But inside was always that feeling of less than. We moved to Connecticut when I was in high school. And at that point, I had never even had a drink. I had my first drink when I was 15, so I started late. I heard that joke before. That's not original. But the first time I blacked out, you know. That's why you drink, right? You know, so everybody can say, do you know what you did? And even that first time, I embarrassed myself, and I still, so there was that feeling of shame, but yet, oh wow, it was cool. I was drinking with older kids, you know. And that's really how I drank from, until March 19th, 2005. It was never about one. It was always about getting out of myself. It was always about oblivion. It was always about, escape, you know. And I went to college in New York City, where those feelings just were multiplied. It was like, now I'm in with the creme de la creme, so I'm definitely not pretty enough, I'm definitely not smart enough, I'm definitely not talented enough, not enough, in my head all the time. But when I drank, it wasn't that I felt like I was enough, it was like, I don't care, But I drank myself, you know, out of a job finally. I showed up to work one day. I was called into human resources, and they said, "You're great when you're here. We just don't know when you're going to be here." And at that point, you know, I felt I had burned all my bridges. And when I was given this topic, courage to change, I was like, when did I have the courage to change? In the beginning, is it courage or is it necessity? But I, you know, I'm so grateful that I feel like my first spiritual sort of awakening was that light inside of me telling me that I wasn't meant to be a fall down drunk forever. I was definitely meant to be a fall down drunk so that I could find these rooms. I believe that. So here's courage to change. I'm going to tell you how old I am. I don't like that. Vanity, character defect. So I was 30 years old when I got into the rooms. You can do the math. And I moved from, after spending 13 years in New York City, to moving to Pawcatuck, Connecticut. Where are my Connecticut people? I got some over here. Woo! Thank you! And that was culture shock. But, you know, I didn't believe that I could get sober alone in New York City. And so I started my recovery there. So I was 30 years old. After living alone for 13 years, I moved in with my parents. And you know the saying, you know, your family pushes your buttons because they installed them. So I went to meetings as much as possible, mostly so that I could get away from them, you know. But, you know, on my walk here today, the gratitude for my mother and my father, that they took me in, you know, and being grateful that they were able to, that I was able. I always jokingly say that I checked myself into my own private Betty Ford, because they had a beautiful, comfortable home in a beautiful part of Connecticut. And I dove into the rooms. Courage to change. I got involved. I guess in the beginning, the courage comes from not picking up that drink, because that's what I know. You know, my first sponsor told me that it's more abnormal for an alcoholic not to drink than for an alcoholic to drink. So the courage to, when things didn't go my way or when I was uncomfortable in my skin, not to pick up a drink, to pray, to pick up the phone, to use these rooms, that's where courage started to come into the courage to change began in my process. Through the years, it's been about, I know, one of the first sayings that really stuck with me was that you're only as sick as your secrets. Cause I got here with a lot of shame. And I also chose a sponsor who modeled honesty in the rooms, in her sharing and with me. At first, when I first met her, I thought, oh my gosh, if that's sobriety, I don't want it. But then when I got to know her, I realized that she was modeling honesty and that she told me, you know, even if you had a great day and something happens right before you walk into the rooms that throws you off, you need to get honest about it. And it's through that I start to see things changing. You know, I had women in my life that loved me till I could love myself. I also love that saying. And things started to change. I went back to school. I was working two jobs. I got a master's. I got a new career. One of the first things too, I remember when I first got here was like, I can't have a champagne toast at my wedding. And people said, one day at a time, one day at a time. And I want to kick you in your face. And I just said, I don't get this. But, you know, I got married in sobriety, and my parents saved a lot of money because the majority of the people, you know, at my wedding were in recovery. But you know what? I also got divorced in recovery. That marriage didn't last very long, and that was 2 years ago. And that's really where Courage to Change is really in my life recently, that things have happened at such an accelerated rate, but it's been quite beautiful. So I got married, and I married someone I shouldn't have, and I knew better, and I did it anyway. And it was hard to admit that. You know, it was really hard to admit that. It was hard to deal with that. So I started going to meetings. I just went back to more meetings. I'm somebody who's never, I've never left the meetings. I've always been involved. I've always kept going to meetings. But my action, John was talking about, you know, the working the steps part, you know, I think I was really just coasting. And so finally, you know, after 8 years, I finally took the suggestion of, oh, get on your knees. And I started getting on my knees, and very quickly after that, I started to develop the insight and the courage, and God helped me get out of a marriage that was not healthy. And then again, I started picking up my meetings, and then all of a sudden, I'm like, I have a sponsee who's talking about service and service and service and service, and she's from New York, and service and service and service. And finally I was like, you know what, I can't ignore this. It's time for me to get involved. So I took a GSR position at my home group, and I went to the district, and from there I started to learn about what that's, you know, what the district level is like, and then I was nominated to be a part of Area 11 Convention Committee, and so I was a part of that. And then, you know, really quickly, God started placing people in my life that started to teach me about service. And I didn't even know. I mean, I knew the traditions, and I think, like a lot of us, you know, there were a few meetings that would have like a tradition the last Wednesday of the month, and you know, you'd get there and you'd be like, oh, I forgot. I would have gone to that other one. But I didn't even know there were concepts. What? And so I started to, one night I started to read the 12 and 12, the tradition one, for the first time in years. And I started to tear up. And I text a friend, and I said, you know, is this weird? And they said, you know, I've cried. And so, and sure enough, as I continued reading by tradition three, I was weeping because of the magnitude and the beauty of this fellowship, and how I haven't been working this program, and how it's my responsibility to know everything about this program and to teach all the newcomers that I can about this program. And I could see God's hand in all of this. And it also made me see that, wait a minute, girl, you have not been working this program. And it's time for you to get honest. And so I realized that, you know, maybe after 9 years with the same sponsor, maybe it's time to get a new sponsor. And I was thinking about, I called a friend, a really good friend of mine, and I don't know if she's here yet, but she's been a friend of mine since I came in, and she's got a few years more than I do. And I'd seen such growth in her just beautiful spiritual growth. And now here's where I'm going to get weepy. I've seen her grow into this beautiful woman with such a spiritual life and a confidence about her. And an ability to speak her truth, whether it makes you uncomfortable or not. And I want that. And also, when I was getting married, she invited me to her house, and she sat me down. And she's the only person in my life who said, "Are you sure you should be doing this?" And something that she says all the time is, "I care more about your life than your feelings." And that's love. So, Dina C., I don't know where you are, but I love you so much. Thank you. And so I decided to start working this program. And I feel like I have had an awakening. And I have a hope today and a faith. I can see that my defects are ego, fear, vanity, pride. And I have to get honest. And when I found out that this was the topic, she keeps calling me. You know, if you're going to be talking at the international convention, you better be having the courage to change. And calling me out. And I want that today. The beauty of this program is that it doesn't end. There are endless possibilities for growth. I feel like I'm on the path of enlightenment today. In service, it's because of my service sponsor, who is delegate of Area 30. Woo! Where you at? It's because of her that I'm here today. You know, she said, "Are you going to the convention? You want to speak on a panel?" Sure. And here I am, and terrified, but also so honored, and you know what? I knew I did this. Hold on a second. All right, I took a picture of today's daily reflections. Raise your hand if you read the daily reflections today. This is one of my rituals. I get on my knees every morning and I read the daily reflections. And I felt like this one was particularly apropos for me. And one of the lines is, "I have been able to learn of God's love for me only by the experience of my dependence on that love. At first, I could not be sure of his direction in my life, but now I see that if I am to be bold enough to ask for his guidance, I must act as if he has provided it." I kind of haven't been acting as if lately. Like, I think that's where my growth and my courage right now is in, okay, stop doing what's comfortable. Just because it's comfortable doesn't mean, you know, I had somebody else recently in my home group. We ended up doing an inventory, and it was all because of this. I was uncomfortable about something, and I said, it was uncomfortable. I didn't want to say it was uncomfortable. And the woman we had to come in to do our inventory said, "If I didn't do things that made me uncomfortable, I wouldn't be sober today." And that hit me. I have to be willing to be uncomfortable if I'm going to continue to stay sober and if I'm going to continue to grow. And I want that. As painful as it is and as uncomfortable as it is, I want that. And I'm so grateful to be here with all of you. I am having so much fun. I love you. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's give another big hand to Amy, John, and Kim.